to the Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher. It is December 4th, 2018, and I am so pleased that you decided to join me today. I have a very, very amazing guest with us today, Faith Maloney, who's one of the founders of Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Utah. And we'll be talking with Faith in just a moment. But first, let me welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. I know how busy so many of you are right now as Christmas is only a few weeks away. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have our special guest on today is because it's almost Christmas. And it's a time of giving. It's a time when many of you are thinking about, what could I give to someone special in my life who I love and I want to show them how much I love them? You may remember a couple weeks ago I shared with you one of my most popular columns called The Gift of Giving, which is really all about the gift of giving rather than the giving of gifts. But today we get the opportunity, you get the choice to decide that you can give someone you love the perfect gift, and that is by giving where someone is in need. And in this case, that someone is some very special animal that Best Friends is either fostering or taking care of or has rescued from a shelter or has on the sanctuary in their beautiful, beautiful piece of land that I've had the pleasure of visiting in Utah, or many, many, many shelters and places around the country. We're going to talk with Faith in a moment. So I, again, thank you for joining me today. Let me remind you that every day we get to make thousands of choices on the Inner Bottom Line. Every one of those choices has a price. Let's make sure that the choices you decide to make today and every day until Christmas really enriches someone else's life, some other creature's life. So now I'm going to turn to my guest, Faith. Welcome to the Inner Bottom Line. You have been here with me before, and I cannot thank you enough for your generosity of spirit to take time, and I know it must be a very busy time of year for you, to join me on the Inner Bottom Line. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you, Olive. Great to talk to you again. I love sharing stories about our animals and our work here in Utah with you all. So thank you.
You're most welcome. And, of course, what I would love to do to start the show off for many of our listeners who perhaps have not had the pleasure of hearing our conversations over the past 4 or 5 years about your life, I have a question for you, and I'm not sure that I ever asked you this. And by the way, listeners, in the interest of full disclosure, while Faith and I have talked with one another on the show in the past, I had the great fortune to make a trip actually with my daughter and her husband 2 years ago. We drove to Kanab, Utah, and we spent 3 days on the facility, on the sanctuary lands with Faith. Faith and I had the opportunity to meet that evening for dinner. It was a very special weekend. And I must tell you that if you want to treat your heart to the one of the most beautiful places on earth, I encourage you to make a date, take someone you love, go to Best Friends, and see for yourself firsthand just what it's all about, because it will blow your mind. Now, Faith, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever asked you this. Let's go back to the beginning, because I'm always fascinated with where we come from and how, as children particularly, we learn to value the things that later in our life inform the choices that we make and inform the contribution we give back to the world. Where were you raised, and where did you first become aware that animals were very special to you and that you wanted in some way to help them and to make their lives better?
Well, I think you can maybe hear, or your listeners can also hear from my accent, that maybe born somewhere else. Yeah, do you think? Yes, I was born in a place called Guildford, which is about 30 miles southwest of London in England, and went to school there, went to art school there. I came to this country here in the U.S. in 1971, so I've been here 47 years now.
What brought you here, Faith?
At that particular time, I was the then husband. I had two small children, and his work was taking him this way, and so I came along too. And that's really how I got started. In fact, Florida was my American birthplace, because that's where I first went, was in the Miami, Key Largo area of Florida, with my son, who just turned 51, is almost about to turn 52, and my middle daughter, who's a school teacher in Beaufort, South Carolina, and she's about to turn 49 in a few days. So, and then I added another child when I came here, so...
And so
animals, you asked about animals. My mother was the big animal lover in our family growing up. My mother and father were both from Ireland. I've done the ancestry test, and it came back as 100%. I'm 100% from Ireland. I know. Even though
that's
I sound
wonderful.
Like I'm
No wonder
I'm
you and
English,
I are compatible.
Yeah, Gallagher and Maloney.
That's right. I love it. We could start a firm.
Yeah.
Although it would be Maloney and Gallagher. I'd put you first.
So
you got that love for your mother. I mean, your mom somehow gave...
Yes, my mother was... she loved dogs. We didn't have cats growing up, but we had dogs. And she was very, very passionate about dogs. I think maybe from her childhood in rural, she was from County Mayo in Ireland, and I think most probably dogs were a great companion. She had a difficult childhood, and I'm sure animals meant a lot to her. So that was where I first saw that in action. And obviously, we had dogs when I was growing up, but I really didn't become completely involved, particularly in animal rescue, until my children were a little older. So, you know, as many of you know, raising children is time consuming.
Yes.
So even though again we had animals in the home, I did not become involved in the rescue side until my kids were a lot older. So,
and how did that all come about? Now, I've heard the story, but I'd love if you would share that with our listeners.
Well, there was a group of us people. Some of us had known each other from college days. I mentioned I went to art school. Some of the folks I knew back then kept in touch. And when we were over here, began to see the issues that were facing animals. And I'm talking now to the middle and late 1970s. And this was a pretty bad time for animals. If people think it's bad now, boy, it was bad back then. The figures we've heard about the numbers being killed were in the region of 17 million animals a year U.S. shelters dying. When I first heard that, I thought, well, that can't be right. I mean, that's like a staggering number.
Yeah.
But for those of us who were alive back then in the middle to late 1970s, there were none of the programs that we have now that service animals. There was not an abundance of spay-neuter options. There were no super adoptions. There were a lot of breed rescues. There were some. But back then, there really, if an animal ended up in the system, in the shelter in your hometown, unless that animal was reclaimed, it was rarely adopted, partly because nobody did quarantine back then. I mean, now it's a kind of routine. An animal comes into a facility, and they're given some quarantine and vaccinations before they're mixed into general population. It didn't happen back then. Everyone was all tossed into the same group. And if an animal brought in an infectious disease like canine distemper or parvo, everybody got it. So everybody died.
Uh-huh.
Same for the cats. So that number, that 17 million number, seemed to make a bit more sense looking at it in that context. And, of course, now we are in a much different place. Here we are almost to the end of 2018. But we're looking, we did the count. We got a group of volunteers to go out all over the country and make the count to the best of our ability. And we're looking at closer to 1.5 million which is considerable difference.
Oh my gosh!
So
I mean, it's
yeah, which
it's
is
still,
which
it's
is
still
why.
Unacceptable, but it's an amazing it's an amazing
isn't
turn.
It? Staggering.
Yeah. I know. I rescued my very first animal in 1976 when we moved to California, and my children were
yeah.
quite young. And I had been involved, as you may remember, I was involved with the International Animal Welfare Fund, Saving the Seals,
right.
and working with the founder of that. And but I had never, admittedly, I had never had the courage to go to a shelter because I have a very hard time. I don't have the courage that my daughter that you met has to just face it and do it. I
yeah.
hurt, but I didn't have the action button. And I finally one day said, I can't keep putting my money where my mouth isn't. You know, I have to match them up. And I went to the Santa Monica shelter, and I found my magnificent Janushka, my Jenny, who turned out to be an Austrian wolfhound and obviously had been lost in a rainstorm and was quivering in the corner of a cage. And Jenny changed my life forever and everything, including how my children grew up around rescue animals. That all changed. But back to your story, what I wanted to have you share with our listeners today is something that I think for many of us, it's where we get stuck. It's not that we don't care. It's not that we don't recognize that something needs to be done. But the difference between so many of us and the difference between you is that you saw something needed to be done, and you and a group of your friends got together and said, we're going to do it, and you've done it. And I think that's where so many times it's so overwhelming to people. They see such a huge need that they're discouraged before
yes.
they even begin. Where do you begin? So how did you get yourselves off the ground? I mean, it's really a miracle story. And you know how long I've been involved and how much I care about best friends. But it is a miracle story. And when you think of $17 million a year down to $1.5 million,
yeah,
folks, let's be
that's
encouraged.
Pretty amazing.
We have a long way to go, but we're in the right
direction.
But we're
closer. Yeah, we're closer to an end than we ever were at the start of this. It's really everybody though plays a part, Olive. We
yeah.
couldn't do what we do without people making a contribution. And if that's all. I say all, it's quite a lot. You know, if people are busy, they're busy lives, they've got families, they've got jobs, they've got what, and they write a check, that enables us and other animal rescue groups to do the work we do. So everyone plays a part. You know, it's all makes a difference.
It
I had
does,
lunch with
and so
a couple today.
I'm going to jump in
yeah.
here and tell everyone right now, if you've got your phone or a device handy or even an old-fashioned pen and paper, I want you to go online to bestfriends.org.
Yep.
Go to the website.
It's as simple
everything
as that. And everybody who connects and spreads the word and makes a contribution and does some volunteering in their own community, everybody then is part of the bigger picture. You know, it's
yeah.
true that not everyone can get together and create a big organization like we've been able to do, but that was also partly because we had a number of people who bonded. You know, it wasn't just a couple of people or one person, but it was several, all with different skills. You know, we had people who could do the writing and people who could do the graphics and people who could do the accounts, the bookkeeping, you know, on and
right.
on and on. We had that group of people that could share the load in getting an organization off the ground, because you're absolutely right. It's very hard to do. And I counsel with a lot of people who are interested in doing this. I do the workshops here, the How to Start and Run an Animal Sanctuary workshops that we've been doing since 1998. We've
That's
run
wonderful.
Three of those a year since 1998. So
I remember
yeah.
when I was still making albums, recording, and I was invited back to my very small hometown of only 1,100 people, Milford, Pennsylvania, and I was the headliner of a show that was put on to raise money for a local animal shelter. And I will tell you, and Faith, I think I've shared this with you, it was one of the most special nights of my life, because it wasn't so much that I got to be the star of the show, but what I got to do. We had 2,000 people each night for three nights. Now,
wow.
In a town of 1,100 people, that suggests that a lot of people came to the show from other places around northeastern Pennsylvania and New York State for one reason only, and it wasn't me. It was because we were raising money to build a local animal shelter, and it was just really such a privilege for me to even be asked to participate. It was amazing. So I think what these past elections have also proven to a lot of younger people in our country or around the world is you don't have to have a lot. $5 a person, that can be a wave. That can
that
make a difference.
Up.
If each one of us puts in a little tiny bit, even if we only have a little tiny bit to give.
Yeah.
But if we work together and we all contribute, amazing things can happen. So we're going to take a small musical break here. But everyone, while you're listening to Peter White and Kenny Lattimore with a wonderful song called River in honor of Christmas, please make a note. Go to the website. Do what you can. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some animals that are waiting for you to adopt them. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Bottom line, I'm your host, Olive Gallagher. It is December 4th, And Christmas is zooming towards us. That was a wonderful Peter White with Kenny Lattimore singing, one of my favorite and rather sad but melancholy, lovely Christmas songs called River. We are talking today to a very special person by the name of Faith Maloney, who is one of the founders of Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. Faith, thanks for being with me today. Tell us about some of the animals, the special animals that you wanted to share with our listeners today. What have you got?
Yes. Well, we deal with we have a lot here. Usually anywhere between 1,600 to 1,700 animals every single day across
goodness.
The species. You know, we do dogs, cats, horses, some farm animals, bunnies, parrots. So we have a lot of animals here available for adoption at all times, but we do special needs a lot, and you know from your visit that we are kind of remote. We're a little hard to get to, so we're not really on the beaten track as a big city shelter would be with a lot of people coming in every single day. So we made a decision many years ago that we could offer time to animals that need a bit extra time to be able to get ready for their home. So we do a lot of that. And we have, and of course we have puppies, which are ready to go. There's one particular puppy that I just heard about, which I thought was a very interesting backstory on. A little tiny puppy came from an irresponsible breeder. You know, they're out there, people who are trying to make money from particular breeds of dogs. This happened to be a boxer breeder. And this particular puppy had was born with a cleft palate and, of course, was not needed extra special care and came to the sanctuary. One of our wonderful staff took on this little puppy, Taco, named Taco, as a foster puppy. And this baby had to be tube fed every 2 hours for about 4 weeks. Taco's now 6 weeks old and is doing extremely well. I'm not sure. I forgot to ask her if he's had the surgery yet or maybe doesn't need it. Sometimes they can outgrow a condition, you know, as long as they can eat on their own. But she said the puppy's doing very, very well. And we have a lot of puppies here right now because we work with the Navajo Reservation, which is fairly close to us, and they seem to have an endless supply of puppies that can come our way.
Interesting.
Unfortunately.
Another
one I heard about, which I thought was definitely a dog that deserves a wonderful home. Her name is Rella, and she came to us from a hoarding case in Texas. We're doing a lot of work in Texas right now, and I can explain a little bit why Texas in a minute. But she came out of a hoarding case there. She and her sister had lived in a tiny pen. She's now 8 years old. When she first came to us, she hid in her doghouse. We have indoor, outdoor, heated and cool, but we also put houses out there if dogs like to, you know, if they're sitting outside and they like to go into a house. And she hid in her house for a long time until she got used to everybody here, and she started coming out gradually, wagging her tail. Now she's fully integrated into her group and deserves a home. Her name is Rella.
She certainly does deserve a forever home. No, I just want to let everyone listening know a little bit about, at least from my perspective, of having had the opportunity to come and spend the weekend with you. And when you go to Best Friends, if you choose, and again, all this is by choice, you can volunteer while you're there, especially if you're staying on the property. You volunteer your morning and your afternoon, and you volunteer for a particular area. For instance, if you want to work with young kittens or cats or with dogs or with horses, wherever the need is, they'll let you know where you're needed, and then you can choose. This morning I'm going to spend with parrots and help there, whatever's needed, whether it's feeding or cleaning or whatever, or I'm going to be with the cats. I remember one morning when we spent most of the day, actually, with the cats. We spent the morning, I think, with the kittens, and then the afternoon we spent in an area where all the cats had very special needs. Two or three of them, for instance, were born where their back legs were basically useless, and they were dragging themselves around. And folks, I have to tell you, you know, part of me wants to cringe and go, oh, but the other part of me, I was awed by the courage and the humor and the determination of these little creatures. They don't know that their back legs don't work because they've never known it any other way. But they have learned to cope. They've learned to cope. They've learned to play. They've learned to play hide and seek. In fact, one little cat that I was supposed to sort of watch outside went and hid under a prickly bush, and I couldn't get to it. It was playing with me. I wasn't playing with it. It was amusing me. It was having so much fun playing hide and seek. And so what happens to your heart when you're in this environment, even for a couple of hours, is it not only takes you outside of yourself and whatever isn't working well in your own life, but it gives you a perspective on appreciating what you have and appreciating just the incredible fortitude of these little creatures and how appreciative they are of whatever they have. And so I encourage you that if you want to give the gift, for instance, of to someone that you love, give them a weekend at Best Friends in Utah. Buy them a plane ticket and send them there.
Good idea.
And let them volunteer. It could change your life. Now, back to you, Faith,
I'm also going to have to say that we now have joined the 21st century, and when people come here, they have actually pre-selected their volunteer shifts ahead of time online. We had to do that, so it's no longer you arrive and then there's a spot for you, because people now are booking ahead of time. So we advise everybody who makes a decision to come here to go to our website to check out the whole volunteering procedure, and you are given then the option for saying, you know, I want to do cats in the morning, dog town in the afternoon, or I want to do pigs or parrots or bunnies, and then that is booked ahead of time. I mean, oftentimes there are spots available, like at this time of year, because we have less people coming in than we do in the spring and summer. But oftentimes people just arrive and all the spots are taken. So we definitely recommend people go through the full procedure of booking everything online ahead of time.
Yes, I definitely recommend it. And also I must tell you that I want you to try to imagine. Best Friends is located on how many acres do you have?
We have just a little over 3,700 acres here.
Okay. On this magnificent tract of, if you've ever been to Utah or New Mexico or the Four Corners area of our country, you know what I'm talking about in terms of the magnificent vistas of mountains and canyons and the red rock. I believe we went to Zion one of the afternoons, and so you're between sort of Bryce and Zion and
We're very close to Zion.
Right.
It's at the entrance to Zion. The road entrance is only about 20 miles from us, Bryce Canyon is a little further north. It's about an hour and a half drive from us, so we're below Zion. But we're very close, and during the season, the north rim of the Grand Canyon is only an hour and a half from us. So lots of options. If you're coming to the area, you can volunteer in the morning, go to the parks in the afternoon, or vice versa. So there's lots of things to see, to bring families, to bring kids. It was lucky. I mean, we didn't plan it this way. The property became available back in there in the 80s. We bought it in 1984 and then realized we were so close to all these national parks. It wasn't some sort of conscious decision. I know. It was kind of like, oh, that's handy.
It's what I call a happy accident. It was meant to be.
Yes, indeed.
yeah, you and I meeting was a happy accident. And also,
yes.
I have to give credit where credit is due. When I was getting my master's in screenwriting, you may remember this, Faith, at the American
yes.
Film Institute in 2008, I had the opportunity to participate in a competition where there were scholarship awards. And here was the challenge. We were given $500 each, that's all, to produce 5 minutes of film. That included shooting it, editing it, the whole thing. And it had to be about an organization that received funding from a foundation. And, of course, within 5 seconds of hearing about this competition, I knew instantly that it was going to be about Best Friends, even before I actually was able to do the research and determine that, yes, indeed, you did receive some money from a foundation. And I
yes.
made the film. And the tagline of the film is, doesn't everyone deserve a best friend? And I won. And
I loved it.
Yeah, it's just one of my, it's just something that, again, it was a happy accident. I take no credit for it because I was so inspired. And this is, of course, before you and I ever personally met face to face and before I ever
yeah.
visited the sanctuary. But there is something special about helping a creature. So, tell me a little
yeah.
bit more about other pets that might be looking for a forever home and be available.
Well,
we
have a wonderful app now, again, 21st century,
okay.
on our website that you can help create a match with. It's under the adopt section on the homepage, and you
okay.
go to it, and there's two little images there, graphics, and it says match for a dog or match for a cat, and this way you can and we have hundreds of dogs and cats here that are available for adoption, but that you can then find out which one of those wonderful images and stories matches your lifestyle. Because that's really the issue. When
yes.
people do it sort of haphazardly, they adopt. They say, we absolutely have to have a puppy.
Mm.
And maybe their lifestyle doesn't match up to a puppy. A puppy
right.
is like having a baby back at home for those of us who had children. And they take on a lot of work, and they're messy and all that kind of thing. So maybe an older animal might be more suited to what you're looking for. Like the dog I mentioned earlier, Rella, she's clearly had a terrible life. And we've had, many animals like that here who she's 8 years old. So maybe not a huge long life ahead. Definitely go to 15 or 16 average for a large, middle to large size dog. So someone could offer many years for that dog,
and be the beneficiary of Rala's love and
yeah.
absolute total devotion. And let's remember
right.
that, folks, that it's not just about what you're giving to the creature. Whatever animal you choose to provide a forever home to, you will receive back double whatever you give. They are extraordinary. I don't know what I'd do without my little Emma. The house breathes when I walk into it because she is waiting for me. And
right.
her unconditional acceptance of my moods and whatever is going on, she's always there, happy, sassy, with a smile, smart as a whip, and total love. So, again.
And here's a special needs cat that that came to us. Interestingly, we take animals from all over the country, and Kona came to us from Hawaii, the island of Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said that right. Kauai.
Kauai.
Kauai. Okay. Kauai. That's right. Sorry.
That's
and
okay.
She tested positive for feline leukemia, which is a virus that some cats get, which is highly contagious to other cats. So
right.
we have a whole building here devoted to cats with feline leukemia. And we knew about the Lanai Cat Sanctuary, and they knew about us. And when this gentleman who'd seen this, Kona was a street cat, saw him kind of around that island, and knew that he was doing okay for a while, and then he saw him not doing so well, which can happen pretty fast with feline leukemia, contacted us because we were he was put in touch with us from the Lanai Sanctuary, and we accepted Kono here, and he's a private pilot, and he flew that cat all the way from Hawaii. Can you imagine how many stops he had to make?
Oh, my goodness.
But,
goodness.
We got Kono here, who's doing extremely well. The pilot was wonderful, wonderful man. And he wouldn't leave until he'd met every cat in the building, every staff person who worked in the building, and was reassured that Kono would be having a good life. Now, that would be an exceptionally wonderful, for someone who didn't have other cats, because
right. You
can't have a feline leukemia positive cat with cats that don't have that virus. It's so easily transmitted. But again, that would be, what a wonderful offering to be able to offer a spot to that wonderful cat.
And does your policy too, that once an animal comes to Utah and has a home at Best Friends, that is a forever home until they
yes.
pass away? In other words, you never, those animals,
yes.
unless they're adopted out, that's their home for life.
That will be their home, and they will live their whole lives here. And we do have, we always say we're open to adoption for any animal here that has not been court ordered to stay here. And people often say, well, what's that? And that is when a judge, an animal has come before a judge in a community, maybe for a behavior infraction, and the judge says, yes, thou shalt live to the animal, but you can't live in this community or any other community. You have to go to a sanctuary. And that's what Best Friends is, a sanctuary. So that has happened over the years. It happened with two of the Michael Vick dogs that we took in. The 22 that we took in from that, two of them were deemed court-ordered, meaning the judge decreed that those should not go back into the community. One for potential aggression, but the other one was because he was the grand champion from this terrible dog fighting ring, and
right.
the judge was being cautious, did not want that dog to ever get back into, you know, being lured into dog fighting again. So that
right.
was the reason Lucas was deemed court-ordered. But every other animal here, you know, all the different species that I mentioned, if someone came along and said, I can do this, I can offer this dog of the special needs care that he or she needs, or, you know, cat or parrot or what, bunny, then obviously we're going to work with that, because a home is the best for every animal. But we know in our heart of hearts that some are going to stay here because their problems are too great, their behavior is too challenging, their medical
yeah.
costs are too high, that this is just not going to happen. So those
yeah.
are the animals that will stay here for their lives. And our staff often provides that final bit of hospice care. We know a lot of our staff will, if an animal has only got a little bit more to go, might be able to open their homes up to take that animal in. They know what to do with the medical care or the behavior issue, and can offer them a home for that last little bit of their life.
To me,
I've done some of that work for Best Friends. I've done
hospice.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that on the other side. We're going to take a very short musical break. I'm going to play a very special song called Hallelujah. I think it's very appropriate given our subject matter. And when we come back, Faith will share with all of us some of those heartwarming stories about fostering and hospice care for animals at the end of their life. Don't go away. Stay with the Inner Bottom Line. We'll be back in just a moment.
One, two, three.
Oh, well, we're going to hear something else.
Thank you.
Pleasure of inviting Faith Maloney, who's one of the founders of Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, as our guest. Faith, thanks so much for taking the time. I know it's the end of a long day, and I know it's a very busy time of year for you, particularly there at the shelter, at the sanctuary. You were just going to talk about working the work that's there when we break.
So sorry, Olive, I can't hear you. Your voice is breaking up.
I'm breaking up.
Yes.
Are you there now?
No, still breaking up.
Oh, dear.
There. Okay, there.
It's better
now? There. Yeah.
Well, there you are. Welcome to welcome to the 21st century and all these fabulous, you know, sometimes just the old-fashioned radio station with the old-fashioned huge mic, it actually sometimes works better. But anyhow, here we are in computer science, and you're here, I'm here, and we'll continue for it. Where were we when we went to break? I can't remember now.
I know we were talking about animals and finding homes, and you know that I really would direct everyone to our website to see all of
yes.
the animals that we have available. I know we currently have a litter of puppies over in our puppy building that were
Aww.
Named after pumpkins. we do themes when we name groups of puppies, and I didn't recognize anyone. I mean, I know what a pumpkin looks like, that orange thing. But did
right.
you know there were like tons of different types of pumpkins? And I asked
no,
one
I
of the
did
staff,
not.
I said,
did not.
I said, I've never heard of any of these. She said, we Googled it. So,
oh
so, and we know people are going to change the name when they adopt. So it's they're not stuck with some weird, strange pumpkin name forever. But for our records and for a bit of fun, we do that. So we have all kinds of of animals here that are available, dogs and cats of all ages, all sizes, from kittens up through to older cats and dogs. But the website is the best place to find that. So that's what I'd say on that one.
I do remember we were talking about hospice care. And the
I should have remembered that.
Well, I got my brain back. The animals that are lucky enough to come and live on the sanctuary in such a beautiful place and receive such amazing care, they're there for their entirety of their life. There is no animals are put down. They're there until they pass away to the next place.
Yes.
And I know that some of you are volunteers, because I do remember when I was there that weekend, and I believe it was one of the cats, I do remember one of your volunteers was making arrangements that that cat was going to go home with her that evening. She was going to be with it during the night. You know, again, if you want to make plans, to anyone who's listening, if you want to make plans for the coming year, for 2019, at a time in this country, at a time in this world, when we need to be reminded of goodness, of honesty, of civility, of courtesy, of integrity, if you want to find yourself inspired again and filled with hope, one of the quickest ways to do that is to go somewhere to be inspired by something outside of yourself. And I cannot urge you enough to think about making a trip to Best Friends in the coming year. And if you have children, for instance, plan it as a family holiday. Make plans to go, make your plans to volunteer and choose what you'd like to do. Talk about a teachable moment for children. This it would be one of the greatest gifts you could ever give your family and yourself. Now, we know that Best Friends, every year around the country, you have parades called Strut Your Stuff, where people come out.
Strut Your Mutt.
I have it written down wrong. I wrote Strut. Well, it's the same thing.
Strut Your Mutt.
I wrote it wrong. I participated in it many times when I was living in Los Angeles, and I'm sure that these parades take place all over the country. Am I right?
They do, yes. We've got many cities now involved. And the groups, the animal groups that participate in that, and they use the walk as a way to raise money, all of that money is theirs. Best Friends does not take a portion of that money. We put on the event. You come for under the name of your rescue. You raise money from your support base. You get to keep all that money. So
that's
we
wonderful.
Know some of the smaller groups can raise their entire annual budget from that one event, which we're very proud of. So
oh, my goodness. I never
it's
knew
something
that, Faith. Can you imagine that I participated? Wow. Didn't know.
Yeah,
that.
Well, good for you.
And we
offer it to our network partners. We have over 2,000 network partners now around the country who are doing all of this wonderful work. I mentioned Texas earlier, you know, the dog came from Texas. And I said, I wanted to reference that back. We have, so that you and your listeners know, we have made one of those big, hairy, audacious goals for ourselves. And that is to take the country no kill, which is defined as a 90% save rate, to no kill by 2025. So that's not that long ahead. And in order to make that goal a reality, we had to do a lot of data work to find out where the killing is happening in the biggest sense. And the head of that, is unfortunately the state of Texas. Texas has the highest non-save rate, if you like, than any other state. Followed by, you will be surprised to hear, California.
No.
Even though the major cities like L.A. and San Francisco are leading lights in animal rescue and animal welfare, a lot of California is rural. As you know, you've lived there, the numbers are not great. Florida is another state, because by volume alone, they have a struggle too. So we're doing a lot of work in those states that I mentioned, plus some of the other ones that we've identified. But Texas is where we're putting a great deal of attention right now in order to change some of those figures from non-live release to live release. So Texas is big now for us.
And now, when you put your sights on, say, a state like Texas, and you decide, all right, we're going to focus on this state, and we're going to try to bring down the kill rate here.
Yeah.
Where do you begin? Do you start at a political level? Do you start with grassroots? How do you start grassroots?
Part of it is we've done this in Harris County, which is the Houston area. We've located a facility, a building that we're going to create as a launching point, an adoption place in Houston. But we are embedded. You remember the whole embedded, like the military journalists used to do in the military. We have embedded ourselves in some of the shelters there in Harris County, and also in a place called Edinburgh, which is on the border, you know, the Texas-Mexico border. We have staff. We just put staff in there, pay for them, obviously, and have them run the positive programs that bring the numbers down dramatically. I mean, we are taking places that were with very low live release rates in the teens and 20s. I mean, that bad, and we're bringing them up to 80 to 90% save rate. So that's by showing people going in there. So it's totally grassroots, going in there and showing people how to do this. And we're doing transports. We're doing a lot of transport programs because there are parts of the country. Oregon, actually, your home state, is one that we do transports to, because there's been so much success in some of the big cities there that they're looking to bring in our animals in from other parts of the country. So we're doing trips from Texas up to Portland to help alleviate this terrible killing. So this is our big striving right now. This is our big moment to bring about this goal. As I said, the goal is not that far off. I mean, 2025. But it is doable, we feel, with the numbers that I quoted earlier, the 1.5 million.
I have great confidence that you will do it, but you're not going to be able to do it alone. You're going to do it with the help of
people
who are listening.
We can get.
Now,
yeah,
you're in the middle
the
of your match.
Get.
You're in the middle right now, or not in the middle. You're actually almost to the end of your very successful matching program, where if someone donates whatever amount they donate, that amount is being matched. I know, because I get the emails pretty much almost every day. How are
we're
doing?
Very well. We're doing very well. Our Giving Tuesday, you know, which was just this last week or so, after Thanksgiving, that was our biggest biggest day this year. 10,000 people, over 10,000 people, gave over 872,481 dollars.
Oh my goodness!
We're on track to get 2 million, to raise 2 million, which will be matched by one of our very generous donors
with
another 2 million. Yeah. By the end of the year, so we're getting there. We're doing well, and that money is going to help get the embedded portion that I mentioned earlier. I mean, all of these things we're doing cost in a way, because, you know, we're paying staff costs to get these people into these very very low release live release shelters to get those figures change. So this is where
showing people not only how to do it, but the fact that it's possible.
Yes, exactly. And showing by example, showing by deed, you know, that's the best way. Rather than preaching at people, that doesn't work. You've got to get in there, get your hands dirty, get stuff done, and then inspire people to do it on their own, and then the word gets spread. So that's a lot of what the work is now.
Well, you know, it's so funny. You first met my daughter when she made her very first trip to Best Friends many, many years ago. She had just adopted her beloved Samantha Blue. And Samantha actually, as a puppy, was used as bait in a dog fighting ring. And that's what my daughter rescued her little baby from. And with her love and her immense magical powers of being a dog whisperer, an animal whisperer, she not only rehabilitated Sammy, but they went on a road trip together all through Idaho and Utah, which is how she ended up her very first time at Best Friends. She knew of the organization. She knew that we had supported it all through her childhood. But it was her first time experiencing it. And years later, I was with her when she decided that she was going to rescue another dog, and went to the shelter. And there was one dog there that was probably a borderline case of the kind where a judge would say, this dog probably should not go into a home. And Dice was in one of the cages. And Deb was immediately drawn to Dice, and Dice had serious behavioral problems, but he really was a pussycat at heart. And she was debating whether or not she should do it, especially bringing home another rescue when she had finally rehabilitated Samantha Blue to a place of great peace in her home for Samantha. And we got in the car, and she was going to think about it. And we started to drive away from, this was in Oakland, at the Oakland shelter, and we turned the corner, and a train came by, and we got stuck. And we're sitting in the car, and I'm not saying a word, because this is not my choice to make. And she looked at me, and she said, Mom, what do you think? And I said, well, maybe we're stuck here for a reason. And she backed up and turned her car around, and we went back to the shelter around the corner and walked in. And as we walked in, the woman at the desk said, Deborah, we're so happy to see you. Deborah said, I want him. And the woman's face, it was like this transformation that went over her face. And she said, when you left here today, we decided that if no one comes in today, we're going to have to put him down. Well, no. We adopted Dice, and we saved his life. So, folks, out of time, but I want to remind you, go to bestfriends.org. Save your own life. Give from your heart. I promise you, it'll change your life forever. Thanks for joining us. I'll talk to you again next week at 3 o'clock on Tuesday. And in the meantime, be good to yourself and take care of the people that you love. Bye-bye.